Some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
Oh, a dogged fellow, aren't we? Or is it merely thy habit to talk to dolls? Fine. Fine. I hadn't expected any soul to recognize me in this guise. But now the cat is out the bag, I cannot allow thee thy freedoms. Perform for me a service as recompense. Eliminate the baleful shadows which prowl these lands. The name of Rani the Witch is already sullied by thee. I will not brook disobedience in this matter.
This is Gary Butterfield.
This is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Bonfireside Chat, where we're going to Noxtella, Ella, O-O-O-A-A. Is that song still cool?
I don't know what song that is. I'm not cool enough to know.
It was a hit like 20 years ago.
Oh, cool.
Oldness.
Fun. Yeah, I don't even know what a hit song is, but that's fine. That's okay. Yeah.
You know. There's a Lizzo about.
I'm a well-wisher insofar as I do not wish her any particular harm. Yeah.
She handled stepping on her rake with the DoorDash guy and handled it pretty well. So I was holding a grudge and then I stopped. There was a Grubhub delivery or DoorDash delivery person, and she called them out with their name and face on Twitter, and they got a lot of harassment. And then apologized for it appropriately.
Okay. There we go.
So it sucked, and then just realized like, hey, I shouldn't do that. I'm very famous. I'm Lizzo.
Yeah. No, that's people should apologize and apologies, you know, should factor in.
Yeah. They should count.
We're not here to talk about Lizzo, though. No? We're here to talk.
Shit. Okay.
All right. Look,
I'm in the wrong room.
Throw out these notes.
If you like this show, head on over to what did we do last time, Cole?
Well, we're here to talk about Noxtella Eternal City, but last time we had a bit of a stopover. We had wrapped up Fia and Dee's quest lines. We had taken the death mark off of Ronnie's body and gone down to deeper depths and got our first mending rune, and thus opened up our first alternate ending there. The one where we might bring about a new Age of the Dead, or Age of Dusk, as it were. But we're hopping back onto the road now from this detour, and we're gonna be picking up Ronnie's trail, trying to figure out how to continue her destiny, and also learning a little bit more about what that destiny might be.
We are spending a lot of time on this kind of these underground diverticula and stuff. It just makes more sense to us to do this stuff together. You know, so like that Fia side quest could have gone anywhere really in the season, but it's related to the curse mark. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we discovered last week that we are, you know, in the witch ditch. We're in the crone zone, right?
Yeah. Crone zone. So War Counselor EG, we talked to him. He had let it slip that Ronnie's path of the Empyrean goes through Runa's Rise. You know, this one tower and the three sisters we haven't been able to get to. It had the force field up. We can now go there.
Yeah. And it's just like every other rise, with a couple of differences. First, we get the Snow Witch set, which resembles the outfit worn by Ronnie, as we know her, you know, the doll form of Ronnie, which makes sense because it was modeled to look like, Rena, the Snow Witch. This is not as blue and not as fuzzy as her version. Hers looks more comfy to me.
Yeah. Well, she's a puppet.
True.
She doesn't have to do combat in it or anything. You know, she can just kind of hang out and then like look at you and make you die. Like she doesn't, you know, it's loungewear. Just a reminder on the Snow Witch. We talked about the Snow Witch a bit. Rena was a crone who Ronnie met in the woods and served as her mentor, teaching her about ice sorceries.
Yeah. Teaching her cryomancy. Something that I have yet to see done. Like this gets close. But, maybe have the whole frostbite thing, but, man, I want to see more cryomancy. Cold
magic
cold
is cool.
Spells rule. Yeah.
Yeah.
All hail Sub-Zero. but there's interesting stuff about Rena and also kind of Ronnie and Renela's relationship as well. God, that's a lot of names that are very similar. But we can talk about it now, you know, since we're talking about some of these forces as elder gods and whatnot. So Rena and Ronnie met out in the woods, you know, just Ronnie rolled up on this crone, and ended up acting as a secret mentor, teaching her cold sorceries. You know, Ronnie growing up in this very doctrinal kind of, you know, family, very directly linked to the moon and the stars and the dark moon, right?
Yes. Yeah. We find out that, or we learn through these descriptions that Rena taught Ronnie to fear the dark moon, even though she does end up utilizing such a thing. You know, this, it's not a big stretch to think that this is why that tutelage was done in secret.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dark moon is, for lack of a better word, somewhere on the scale of blasphemous, you know, or at the very least anti against the doctrine.
Yes.
Of the Carrions.
Yes. You know, Renala's queen of the full moon, right?
Yeah.
You know, that is, you know, she found that out in the woods, and she used that to rise up in the ranks, how, you know, dazzling the people at the academy, right? Like, oh, fuck these stars. We got this moon. It's a lot closer, right?
Yeah. The Lucky Charms war began.
Renala was the one who taught Ronnie, like who had Ronnie and the Dark Moon meet. We learned from Ronnie's Dark Moon sorcery that you know, Renala used her powers to kind of show her. You know, it's weird talking about these because I have no idea what actually differentiates the two of them, the Dark Moon and the Full Moon.
I don't know either. And again, I think they're playing with real life stuff a little bit, because in real life, nothing differentiates a Dark Moon and a Full Moon,
right?
Other than the angle. You know, so like there is a, we have these things, you know, in real life, depending on moon phases. Right.
Yeah.
I feel like they're playing with that.
Yeah.
In that space a little bit.
So, you know, same thing. They're complicating all of this. There is something in the lore called the Black Moon.
Yes. Which we get a big chunk of.
Yes.
Later in this episode. This is where memory stones come from.
Right.
There being a black moon and a dark moon is irritating to me a little bit. Like, I generally like the messiness of Elden Ring. Like, I think it's a work where the messiness is really additive.
Mm-hmm.
There are still points of friction for me, you know. My personal, and this is can be unsatisfying to people, my personal take on this stuff is I am okay letting it be fuzzy.
Mm-hmm.
It being fuzzy and possibly referring to the same thing, but from different perspectives, feels thematically sound with the rest of the game to me. And also with unreliable narrators, like the people who are naming these things are not authors. You know, I mean, literally are, but in the world of the game, they're people. So they can be ignorant of these things.
They're not like collaborators on a wiki, right?
Yes.
Or it's like, yeah. You know, so like saying that they're one and the same, or like Renala's Dark Moon is the same as the one that hung over Noxtella or any other of the Eternal Cities. We don't know which one it hung over. But, you know, saying they're one and the same, you know, on one hand, it draws a link between Renala and the Nox that just is not there. You know,
like
there's just not an awful lot, you know, an awful lot of other stuff that, you know, links the two of those directly, aside from the fact that indirectly, you know, if the dark moon and the moon are considered to be, you know, synonymous with the stars, you know, as the, you know, the outer force, right? The outer god that it is. And they just both inadvertently worship the same force, you know, separated in time, kind of like the death worshippers in the north. And the new death worshippers down here after Godwin's death, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. Like that is a link possibly. But, you know, the fact that there is this dark moon and there is this worship, you know, is, you know, and it is in secret. Like, it's totally in secret, you know, Rennala worshiping this thing outside of the, you know, the glimpse or the view of the Academy, because anything named and related to the dark moon and also related to the family, is hidden away. The dark moon greatsword, the family wedding ring, Ronnie's dark moon sorcery, all of this is stuff that you have to go to great lengths to get access to.
Well, they're not hidden by the system at play, though. Like, the ring and stuff is hidden by Ronnie.
Yes,
you know, it is put away. It's not public knowledge, but it's not mm-hmm. Conspiratorial in that respect either.
Yeah.
You know, the it's a fuzzy zone to me. Mm-hmm. Like, again, unsatisfying to me, but it's or could be unsatisfying. Mm-hmm. But like, they're hidden away in the gameplay. You do have to go to kind of great lengths to find them. Mm-hmm. They're tucked away, but it's not like they're canonically or textually being hidden by the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if that distinction makes a difference.
The only distinction would be like, you know, Rennala as just, you know, the dark moon as a Carrion family, you know, Carrion family thing, as opposed to, you know, the full moon, which was brought to the Academy, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, there's not a whole lot of evidence about a system wide kind of concerted effort
mm-hmm.
other than just kind of omission.
Yeah.
You know,
it's annoying that I put this in the notes here, but I kind of want to see if you have a feeling about it. Why is her name Renna? We have a Rennala. Like,
same reason we have so many names that all sound the same.
But no, it can't be the same reason, because all of those names sounding the same, that indicates a family connection.
Who knows? We don't know. We don't know enough about Renna.
Yeah.
You know, for that, like, there could be a family connection. What if this is an aunt?
An aunt, a grandma. I mean, the fact that she grandma, is
Rennala's sister, Rennala's mom. Yeah. We just don't have enough. The Snow Witch is just not explained very much,
right?
In this,
yeah.
Certainly could be a family connection. If not family, though, like house.
Yes,
you know, carry like an outcast Carrion mm-hmm. hedge witch.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So
who probably probably was cast out and you know, knew about the dark moon because, you know, she was part of the house.
It makes as much sense.
Yeah.
The Snow Witch is a big, we don't get quite enough stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel so personally.
Yeah.
So there's a way, when we go in here, there's a way gate at the top of the tower to this portal underground. We take this and we appear in the Ainsel River main, this grotto at the top of that. Mm-hmm. Where last year when we took that elevator way back in Liurnia,
that
led us to the old palace ruins.
Yes. Or the, sorry, maybe it was the old palace ruins, basically the same. You know, there's not much here unless we notice that there is a glowing thing. There's an item on the edge of this open burial vault. It's an action figure. It's a doll. It's miniature Ronnie. It says the unresponsive doll seems pleasantly cool. And I love the idea that she abandoned her functional body to become, to become a small soldier. Yeah.
To become one of the small soldiers. Yeah. And she's pleasantly cool. if you want to be a doll for me, this is great. This is very funny. to me, it's also, I want to draw a little attention. I think that with, you know, the way that people experience FromSoft games, where you are trained to poke at the edges and also trained to pick up knowledge from other places,
mm-hmm.
how this is a pretty counterintuitive way this quest can, like, this is pretty esoteric.
Yes.
Not so much that you have to, like, having the doll, then noticing the option, the set of grace to talk to it, but then knowing you have to talk to it like a certain number of times.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't respond. So you could really, you could think, oh, okay, this is not a thing. But you have to do it, keep doing it.
Yeah.
Until the action figure talks back to you.
It really is just for big from heads. You're like, okay, they added this to the menu for a reason. So,
And I feel like most people who play this game who want to do this stuff, playing it probably more casually, just read that you have to do this.
Yes.
You know, as opposed to going through the puzzle,
yeah,
you know, of this, of pushing at the boundaries of the space.
Yeah. So you, like, you get an option when you sit down at the site of grace to talk to the miniature Ronnie. And it's almost like they are making a nod to, like, okay, if you figured this out, you must be an experienced FromSoft game player, because she says, oh, a dogged fellow, aren't we? Or is it merely thy habit to talk to dolls? Which feels pretty much like a Bloodborne call out.
The Bloodborne, you know? And previous Ronnie, yes. you know, but yeah, it's if it's a habit. Right.
Yeah.
And you go back to Bloodborne, the very first time you can talk to that doll, it doesn't talk to you. Mm-hmm. Like a world state happens. You don't have to just keep clicking to make the doll talk to you, but it is a similar kind of thing.
Yeah. I love her attitude at this point, because mm-hmm. she's still talking to you like, you know, she is a regent, you know, pressing you into service or what have you.
Like you couldn't spike her into a blend jet.
You know, tire to some tire to the tracks of Model Railroad,
lighter on like a penny. Yeah, like I don't know, man. Like, you could do a lot of Gremlins 2 gizmo torture on baby Ronnie. Girl, I don't think she could do a lot about it.
No, but she's talking to you like that, but it feels very much like kind of tongue-in-cheek, you know.
It
feels a little bit more playful, right? You know, because you know, for finding you, she treats this like it is this, you know, this grand offense. You know, I cannot allow you your freedom. You know, I'm going to compel you into service in recompense, right?
Yeah, it's cute.
Yeah,
she says she wants you to eliminate the baleful shadows in the area, which we'll talk about when we get a little bit further in.
Yeah,
here. If we keep talking to her, something about being a doll loosens mm-hmm. her tongue.
Yeah.
There. You know, she's gonna volunteer a lot more information about her plans.
It's probably pretty boring to be trapped in a doll.
I could see upsides and downsides to it. I would like to be pleasantly cool.
Yeah.
But she canonically says, oh, maybe this current form has loosened my tongue,
I think she's brushing it off. I think that she like is just trying to be like, she trusts you at that point because you've done so much for her. You know, that's a conversation that happens later. I think she's trying to play it off legit. I think she's just trying to be cool.
Or she got drunk on a thimble full of wine. Again, it was very cute.
Like a little gnome.
Yeah. Like you're ignoring many adorable options here, Cole.
I'll try and revise my thinking. Yeah, I apologize. Yeah.
Think cuter and smaller.
Just walking around with a little acorn cap on her.
Yeah. Just like, it's very darling. You know, using a fruit roll up as a sleeping bag.
Uh-huh.
You know? this thine will do. And then just like pulling a little fruit roll up. I don't know how people don't fall in love with Ronnie. Like, you know, somebody called us a Ronnie Simps. It's I don't know, man. It's real cute. She turns into a little doll mm-hmm. and is funny. Yeah, it's great.
Oh man. So the option to talk to her will pop up at you know, later Sites of Grace, until you know, she gains her full form back. This river, we're gonna follow this, mm-hmm. Leads down to the old palace ruins, where we get kind of a reprise of the encounter that we had down the lower level there. We have lots of ruined walls here that can provide cover for the meteors that are spewed at us by this malformed star, hovering over this tunnel entrance on the far side.
Yeah. And it's complemented by the claymen who are here, who will kind of throw projectiles at you and do these somersaults at you. They're still slow. Like, they're a little mm-hmm. bit more mobile, but they're still really slow. This is really interesting, I think, as an encounter design, because you can't, you know, as I mentioned before, like, I will play with ranged weapons in this game, especially when I'm fighting a big, you know, ranged turret thing. Mm-hmm. But you can't stay in one place very long because these things will very slowly creep up on you.
Yeah.
It's like a grenade flushing you out of cover, but on a very long timer. Like an inevitable encroachment.
Yeah. My problem with these guys is they blend in with kind of the wetland kind of area where they come at you.
Once you can run this,
this is like a little side thing. Like if you just run out to the the big waterfall, there's a big Miranda blossom. It's one of the black ones that builds up madness. No idea why it's here. This roughly is below the Frenzy Flame Village. So Yahtzee, why not?
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. The tunnel behind this Malform Star, which leads down to an ant's nest. We've talked about the shieldhead ants that we ran into last time, the flying ants. And there's a little tunnel off to the left here with this ledge that's overlooking the old palace ruins, where the star callers are up on the ledge above up here.
They hit the mother load.
Yeah, the star calls you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can go out on a beam here and we can find a relic. We find the wing of Estelle. We're going to find Estelle definitely next episode. This is one of his wings. It's a curved sword. It has a neat little weapon art where you replicate one of Estelle's moves. You kind of swing it and it creates this kind of like field of stars in front of you.
Of dino DNA. Like those little circles. Yeah.
Yeah. And then those kind of explode like little novas. I don't use this one. The mace that I like to use is the one that you get from Estelle's Remembrance, which does something similar, but it's a bigger effect on the mace.
Nice.
Yeah.
We backtrack down the waterfall slope. There we reach this dam wall with the Noxtella City ruins.
Yeah.
Here.
It's gorgeous. It looks so good. So
all of the underground areas in this game do a really great job.
Yeah. So with the other one with Nokrin, it was gorgeous because you had this night sky and that kind of cold purple light offset against kind of the green and the warm light of the torches that you saw that were lit there. There is no warm light here. This entire area is kind of done in purples and blues and blacks. But it is a similar, like this is more, more night sky-y than the rest. But you have the artificial stars kind of hanging here. This owns.
Yeah, true darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the city is built on either side of this river and it bridges the Ainsel River, which you've seen. And Ronnie's tongue, loosened by doll wine, will speak to you at the set of grace here. And this is where we learn a lot. Like we've said some of this stuff, but this is where we learned it. When we talked about Ronnie, we learn a lot of details about Ronnie here. This is where we find out definitively she was an Empyrean, along with Melania and Mikola, chosen to secede America. And when the Two Fingers chose her, they gave her Blythe in the form of a vassal tailored for an Empyrean. Again, the way that the Empyreans have a shadow.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where she says, like, okay, I used that rune. I destroyed my flesh to break free from the control of the Two Fingers. As long as I was in the body of an Empyrean, I would be under their sway. And that's what caused them to, let the dogs out, to send out their baleful shadows, these assassins.
Yes. Yeah. After this conversation, you can continue down the river to proceed. We find the Nox here, who are now riding the ants.
Yeah.
They are mind controlling the ants. They are casting a spell. You can see this, and the ants will turn on their riders, which is really cool.
It's pretty tough to get them off of the ants. Like, I'm not sure exactly what conditions you need to fulfill, but if you do it, yeah, they will prioritize them over you, which is nice.
Yeah, they're not on your side or anything. They'll fight you as well. But
they just have revenge.
They have revenge on their mind.
Yeah.
Pretty neat little touch. Mm-hmm. The idea of the Nox having these mind control powers is something that I don't know where else it shows up.
Right.
They have the silver tears and tier creatures working for them as well.
Yeah.
But I assumed that was mutual interest since those were creations of the Nox, that they were under more direct control, but it might be the same tech, the same aspect of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the control over the ants, obviously not complete. The ants were not created by the Nox. And the Nox are not from here. right? Yes. Like they, it's not like they have generations of having domesticated these things. It's not, you know, the drow with their spiders or whatever. You know, they came in and did what they could to ride these beasts of burden around. And it is a shaky alliance at best.
Yes. Yeah. The right bank of the river has some ruins with a Nox monk in it. These are the ones that they have the floppy, like silver, quicksilver maces
mm-hmm.
that they have, they use. Kind of tough. Like all these mm-hmm. things are a little bit tough.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
So like silver knight level enemies. Mm-hmm. We could run straight down this river and get to the elevator that'll take us to the next area, but we want to check out the city first.
Yeah. We want to head up here. There really isn't a story reason to go up here. Like, we're not going to get any huge revelations. You want to do this for two big mechanical reasons, you know, outside of making a podcast about it. You want to do this if you're a caster, and you want to do this if you are doing any kind of spirit summoning, right?
Yeah.
Primary things, and you don't know
which way to go. Yeah. Right. So like you're exploring it because you're exploring, because you're trying to find the shadows she told you about. You don't know which way they're at,
mm-hmm.
you know. Fulfill your duty. You head up the stairs on the left here, and we are introduced to a new version of these silver tears, these silver slimes that are lightning charged. They'll attack with lightning charges, and when you kill them, they discharge their lightning, which will chain reaction to other mm-hmm. ones.
Yeah. This is great if you're doing any ranged combat, because you can just set off a whole bunch of them from a distance.
If you're doing range, they end up being easier.
Yes.
They kind of make up for it by having huge numbers.
Mm-hmm.
of them. But again, not, this ended up being easier. Like you fight way, way, way more of them, but you're always getting 2-for-1 deals at least from killing them.
Yeah. These stairs, they lead up, past and by some of these treasure rooms. I love the first one. You find a shield. It's a great shield. It's the ant's skull plate. It is the head of one of those big, barrier ants that we have fought before. You know, there's amazing craftsmen, the Nox, you know, carving these wonderful cities. This is just one of those heads held up, used without modification as a shield.
Have you seen in like some advancement in photography has happened? Did you see that wildlife photographer who was taking the close-up pictures of ants?
Oh, it's horrible. The ant's face.
It's amazing.
Looks like a little demon.
It's totally a demon. It's like the evilest looking thing that there ever was.
Yeah.
Like it's incredible. It if that could get captured in giant ants, because we fought a lot of giant ants in video games, but they don't capture how terrifying they really are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of amazing that we still haven't gotten there with how scary that shit is in real life.
Yeah. I mean, ants in general are pretty, you know, creepy in terms of it, you know, just the hive thing. You're gonna laugh at me because I'm gonna make a reference to a thing you were too old for when it came out. There's an Animorphs book where they to do one of their missions, they have to turn into ants to get through. When an Animorph takes on the form of a creature, they kind of take on some of the instincts as well. And it was really effective horror. As you know, it's each of them is written from the perspective of one of the kids. Like it was one of the most loathsome things that they ever turned into, because they had just like as they were going around and like in the pheromones and stuff, they could feel their like will being taken over by the hive, you know, and just like there was just nothing but this just constant compulsion, this droning drum kind of thing taking them there, and that is that has stuck with me. So yeah. I knew you would laugh, but it was very effective horror.
I didn't. No, I thought you were going to say like, oh, it's something from your time. There's a really intense episode of VR Troopers where Flabber had to kill an ant or something. And I was like, oh, okay. Like it could have been way worse. I'm familiar with the Animorphs. I never read one of those books, but it's not, you know, it's not that bad. That is scary. The idea of turning into an ant. I would rather just leave that whole Animorph business to
the
Animorphs. Yeah. Like I don't have any interest in
that. You know, I think they would do. I would just slow them down.
Yeah. or like, and, you know, and then they Animorph into me and it's like they Animorph into the podcaster. It's all sad. I can understand the appeal of like, I oftentimes have been thinking about or recently been thinking about how great it would be to be one of my cats. You know, just because like they just have a really nice life and I want to sleep more than I get to. You know, and they get to, but I wouldn't want to anamorph into it. No, I don't want to be trapped in it. I just want to be able to, like, you know, maybe I just switch lanes and just kitty become cat a cat. Yeah, kitty cat man. Just absolutely. Even though that Tim was just screaming the whole time. He was trapped in there. So I don't know. But yeah, ants. They're fucked up. Their nature shits. There's another mausoleum here full of these silver tears, where you get the ghost glove warts picker spell, one of the higher end ones. So very good for New Game Plus. And for avoiding, you know, tomb raiding.
Yes.
For making your spirit ashes better. Mm-hmm. There's an imp gate here that'll take you into another silver tier ambush. And this is where you can find a chest with the Night Maiden and Swordstress puppet ashes.
Yes. It's a twofer. Just a pair of, you know, some of the Nox enemies that we've been fighting. With the detail here, these sisters, members of a cold-blooded race who wield flowing weapons, became puppets of their own volition. To which I ask, why?
Yeah, doesn't seem so smart to me. I don't know. We don't get enough about these individuals.
No,
to have a good answer for that. I feel like. Mm-hmm. I've never used these, so I don't know if they're useful. I can imagine them being too fragile,
mm-hmm.
really. But getting two for one does seem good.
Yes. No.
We're running into one of my favorite enemies in the game.
Oh yeah. Over here. We saw one of them before, down in Nocturne.
I just love them.
I just love these things. Yeah. So there's a bridge that kind of connects the two sides of the city over this river. You cross over and, a silver sphere appears and attacks. We get Marble Madness.
I love it so much. I love these things. It's so dorky. After you get past this, there's a chapel on the far end of this bridge, that has more of these kind of anguished, like, stone figures, you know, those, Yargul.
Yes.
Style statues there.
Yeah.
And you step in, the door seals behind you and another sphere comes and attacks you. You're trapped in here with it.
Yes.
This is in order to get a great ghost glove wart.
Yeah. Take one of your spirit. Well, that's for your unique spirit ashes, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. To plus 10.
Yeah. So again, really big deal here. Take your mimic tier, take your, Tiche up there, mm-hmm. to plus 10. And all of this is kind of leading up to kind of a large main building that is at the very, very far end of the temple, or of the city rather, this huge chapel, which seems for all the world like it is going to contain a notable boss encounter or some huge thing. No, not really. It's an encounter, right?
I think there is probably a pretty good argument to be made that this wasn't the intended makeup of this, you know, with the ceremony, that this has and the way this area ends up being a bit of a dead end.
Yeah.
I can imagine there at one point in development being something more important to fight and more important to get.
Yeah.
Here, you know, so you, when you get in here, you just fight a, two mimic tier enemies that fight alongside a Nox Swordstress,
mm-hmm.
and you get one of the treasures of Noxtella, which is the Moon of Noxtella talisman. I'm talking about that black moon, parts of it that are the memory stones. This is a big memory stone.
Yes. Takes up a talisman slot, but it raises your memory slots by two.
In no universe would this ever be worth it.
Nope.
In a different game economy, it would, mm-hmm. but they went and made, and I like this, you know, but they went and made, the playthrough made memory stones really easy to get.
Yes.
You know, part of the remit of Elden Ring is they realized that,
putting stats levels in.
And like that's kind of bullshit. So they made getting these really easy.
Yeah.
Like you will end up with more memory stones than you need, even as a caster,
mm-hmm.
like my dedicated caster build still ends up having like, I guess I'll take this.
Yeah.
Spells.
Yeah.
I cannot in a million years imagine this being useful. Mm-hmm. That is also part of the reason why either in an earlier iteration this would have been useful, or in an earlier iteration something else was here.
Yeah, that and the fact that this is proximate and just kind of tacked on to the Lake of Rot, which we definitely know changed purposes. It is all kind of lining up to make this whole area feel like it is vestigial to a degree. It's not really related to Ronnie's thing except for the fact that we have to go through it in order to reach the end and get up to the chapel where we're gonna marry her.
Yeah. And we don't need to go through this part.
Right.
Like we have to go down to the river. This is a side path by any way you slice it.
Yeah.
You go back down to the ground to walk along this river. You can look over the ledge and see the arena under that gigantic skeleton sitting in a chair where we fought our first Dragonkin soldier memories. There is a new type of snail here, new snail dropped. These are just regular snail enemies. There are three different snails, snailotypes in this game. There are spirit caller snails, these snails, then my favorite, which are the skeleton snails. I don't think we've run into those yet.
No, those are mostly up on Altus is where those are.
And there's a boss, like we'll find a necromancer who has them. But those are snails that you've used skulls as their shells.
Yeah.
These guys are just fucking snails.
Yes. Well, I mean, they're big snail guys. Yeah, like they've got snake, snake elements to them.
Yeah, but they're still just, I don't know. Well, in terms of enemies around here, they're not that exciting to me.
they move around and
yeah, and you hit them.
And you hit them. They kind of don't do much of anything down here.
No.
And weirdly, we're only going to see them again in this form in Magma Mansion up in the Volcano Manor. So weird.
We get the highest concentration of slimes in the back portion of this river. This huge gauntlet of slimes, including these archer slimes that are shooting bolts at you, covering the other slimes.
They have squad tactics.
Yeah, it's a D&D party of slimes. Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And again, the fact that there are electric ones in the mix makes this easier.
Yeah. The river kind of dead ends at the back. The way forward is this elevator well that we go into that takes us down to the Noxtella River Basin. This is like a little vestibule that we land in, and the far end there is an ant tunnel that is kind of being overgrown with some fungus, giving us a little bit of a preview of what's coming.
Ronnie, drunk on smallness, will continue to talk to us here, talking about how Blythe and EG remain loyal to her even after she started enacting her plan to go against the Two Fingers. And this was really surprising because Blade was a plant. He was created to serve the Two Fingers and keep an eye on her. Every Empyrean has a shadow.
But he was so loyal that he was able to defy his nature, right?
We'll get into it.
We're of differing opinions on that.
You're right about but I'm talking about the thing that happens later with him. We'll get to that.
I don't know how to read her tone when she's talking about Blythe and EG. Like, I don't know if she is regretful of the fact that they're kind of being used, or if she's actually like expressing gratitude for it. She says, Blythe and EG both are willing to give too much to me, yet they must understand what lieth beyond the dark path, that I must betray everything and rid the world of what came before. Should I add thee to the list, another one kind of heart, as kind of heart as they. Right? Like, is she almost, to me, it kind of seems like she is, regretful that there are these good people who are coming into her service that she ends up having to use.
It does sound a little like that, almost like a warning as well.
Yes.
Do you want to keep doing this? Because these are two people who are worse off.
Yes.
Even though ultimately the way they are, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, she's also lying, about destroy everything. You get rid of everything that came before. She'll tell us ultimately what her plan is once she ascends, but it does not involve raising all civilization and life off of this planet.
I think when she's talking about getting rid of everything before, I think she's talking specifically about the cosmological order.
Yeah,
getting rid of the golden order and the structure, system power structures.
She doesn't say it that way though. She's making it sound like it is ultimately destructive.
Which maybe if this is something she's trying to warn you off of, maybe that's part of that, for your own good, she's trying to make it sound unattractive.
Yeah. Or, it could be, testing as well.
Yeah.
Like saying like, okay, well, here, you know, are you still in? Are you still in it? You know, because these dopes didn't know.
If you can't handle me at my worst.
Yeah. It just spew. If she runs, it was never meant to be. Yeah.
Yeah. When you start going down this tunnel here, the air takes on this reddish pink. This is where I was wrong before. So like for all the world to me, I thought this, we fight the baleful shadow. Mm-hmm. For all the world, I thought this was blind. The first
looks
time
very similar.
Well, I think the game does a lot to suggest. Mm-hmm. It happens right after the conversation where she says, I'm really surprised Blythe stuck with me. He's an agent of the Fingers. Mm-hmm. At this point, you can put together that, you know, what Blythe's purpose was.
Yeah.
And it would make a lot of sense for Blythe to break bad here, especially since at this point, at least in my first playthrough, I had done all the stuff with EG where EG had locked him up.
Yes.
You know, for his own good. Mm-hmm. This is more of a cruelty on behalf of the Two Fingers sending somebody who looks like Blythe. Mm-hmm. Sending a projection, like a shadow, a copy of Blythe.
Yes. Also, the fact that all of their servants, you know, that they send out are dogmen, you know, associated with Farrah Mazula or not. Just literal, just the literal dogs here, but an extra stab. Okay, so the dog that spent his life with you and that loves you, not gonna do this. Well, we're gonna send you something with his face.
There's different doggo types who get sent by the Two Fingers, because Malekith doesn't look like this,
right?
You know, he's a shadow and looks different. Mm-hmm. So like this, there's a specificity to his look, I think. Mm-hmm. And it's somewhere between like a regular boss fight and an NPC invader boss fight.
It's complicated. Yeah. Because he's got the moveset of a boss. Like he straight up does like Artorias stuff.
Yeah. But he's not quite a boss. Like he's still like human scaled. It's like he's doing those things through like weapon art, it feels like.
Yes.
For lack of a better word, it feels in engine, you know?
Yeah.
To an NPC character to me.
Yeah, and it presents as an invader, like he has the red effect around him, right? And you know, one of the things that makes him difficult is the fact that he can just straight up drink from a crimson flask. Like he will chug an Estus just like an NPC invader, or just like the game mimicking an NPC invasion.
Yes. Yeah. Very, you know, pretty difficult. You have a lot of spacing you can do. This you can put him into a choke point in this little cave here. Like you have a lot of options as well, but a difficult fight. If you're having problems with this, running past him and hitting the side of grace behind him is really useful, because it's a much shorter run.
Shortens the iteration loop. A mechanical thing that feels a little contradictory, but I want to get your sense on it, is so Blythe, we have fought alongside him, his sword is imbued with frost, you know, because of his leash. This, the Baleful Shadow, uses a sword coated in red light. This is the Black Flame.
Yeah.
Which seems contradictory for an agent of the Two Fingers to to send, because it is so anathema to the Golden Order, but also makes sense because they are trying to kill a god or a demigod, as it were, right?
Yeah, the hypocrisy of them being, you know, like I think that they that co-opting this is just force. Them in line with them being hypocritical.
Yes,
you know, it feels like to me. Mm-hmm. During the fight, Ronnie has dialogue from your pocket, which is really cute. Like Ronnie will speak.
She's speaking into just like a thimble, or just echoing her voice out, doing something.
Yeah, it's very sweet. Tells the Baleful Shadow to warn the Two Fingers that she's coming for them. You know, fuck off.
Yeah.
After you defeat the shadow, she'll thank you. Saying that she can finally stand before them, and gives you the discarded palace key. We're going to use that during the next episode, but as a little preview, this is what's going to get us her wedding ring and stuff. When I thought this was Blythe, you know, I thought that was the end of Blythe's story. It's not. He is up by her house now. He's by Ronnie's Rise.
Yes.
And he has lost it. He does attack you ultimately, mm-hmm. out of jealousy. So like, even though I was initially wrong about thinking this was Blythe turning on you, he does lose his mind through these conflicting commands.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't think EG ends up ultimately, you know, killing himself because he feels guilty about not trusting Blythe. I don't think he necessarily needed to. I think Blythe would have snapped given that he just goes feral, like, at a point, you know?
He was correct that Blythe was going to do this. I think he was wrong about the reason why, you know.
It's hard to tell, right? Because if mm-hmm. when he snaps, he talks about how he's like, oh, you know, how could she cast me away?
Yeah, he says, I'm her very shadow. He repeats this, and that's you know, like, he's saying it in madness, like it's almost like it's become his obsession, almost like it is his programming that was coming in. Before, he was saying it in sorrow, like how could she have left me behind? I'm her very shadow, you know, like, and here he is, you know, howling and red-eyed and, you know, kind of screaming this, trying to assert it almost as he is trying to kill you. I think that part of why I'm a little bit hesitant to say that this is just, you know, his two fingers programming coming in, is like, ah, he was going to go crazy sometime. I think that I think it is a better story that as long as he was at Ronnie's side, as long as he had that purpose, he wouldn't have gone. Because if he was going to succumb to his programming, he would have done it as soon as she revealed what her plan was, you know, to subvert this. I think that this only happened because she broke his heart by leaving him behind. I see this as a hollowing.
I don't disagree with that. I just think that that's a good reason to leave somebody behind.
That they have it in them.
I'm not joking. Like, it's not there are too many parallels to this that are like, you don't keep somebody around because they will turn on you if you reject them.
Okay,
you know, that's awful. Like, that's, you know, that's shitty. And the fact that he does it, he is kind of saying it like a mantra, like, no, I'm the champion. And he's saying it to you, who is the current champion. It's all kind of gross, like, jealousy vibes.
Oh.
That I think are just kind of nasty. Like, I don't have sympathy for him because Ronnie can have whoever she wants.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if that's just maybe in 2022 feminist pulled about it, but like,
I didn't read him as an abuser. I'm not making light of it, but that is the, you know, kind of the language that is working here.
Yeah. Right? Like, I'm not trying to make light of it either. I'm not trying to compare a video game situation, but like the idea that, he doesn't take no for an answer,
right?
In a quite literal way. Like, she cast him aside and it makes him turn to violence.
One has to imagine. Kill him.
She didn't do anything. She just like said like, hey, it's been real.
Right.
Go about your business. And his business was then to turn into a violent maniac.
Right. I believe if you let him out, I think that if you keep him in the Everjail, he stays there. Correct me if I'm wrong. Please respond in a comment if he shows up, even if you don't let him out of the Everjail.
I think so. When I was reading, I think he does once you complete the quest.
Okay.
This is also a thing that is tricky. I give myself a little bit of grace for not getting this full story in my first playthrough, because the trigger that makes him appear at Ronnie's Rise is disputed. What ends up making him do there, it's like whether it's after you beat Astale. Another thing is when you complete the quest line, so you actually get the Moonlight Sword.
Mm-hmm.
It is a disputed thing. Reports vary.
Yeah.
You also have to have a reason to go back there.
True.
You know,
there ends up being like, you wouldn't know this if you were just poking around and playing the game naturally. You do get more dialogue if you go back there.
Yeah.
But it's not like Ronnie says at any point, like, oh, let's, you know, reconvene for a debrief, back up at my place.
Yeah. Let's debrief, you know, debrief.
Yeah. You know, debrief. Yeah. I don't know. I just, I'm trying to decide if I find Blythe's whole thing tragic, right? Because it is, you know, do you think at any point they told him, hey, this is why we got to ice you, like, and not ice, like kill, but just like, hey,
ice him out, like, why you're out of the gang.
Yeah, you just explained, because like, does he know what he is a creation of? Does he know that he was put here with this purpose? Ronnie never says that Blythe accepted it, you know, accepted her plan and their shared fate with full knowledge. She says like, oh, you know, despite his provenance, he still came along with me.
Yeah.
Right. Like how much is Blythe in on this, and how much is his kind of hollowing and his rejection of the rejection, you know, just caused by bewilderment? If he understood that being apart from her was the best way to do service to her and her goals, you know, would that have actually helped, or would he still demand to be by her side as the shadow because he can't defy his nature?
There's not enough information to definitively say, like, the fact that he uses the vocabulary, you know, he uses shadow as this. Yeah. He refers to himself as her companion and brother and all those things, but he also uses that vocabulary, which like means a specific thing.
Yes.
Makes me think there's some awareness there. Mm-hmm. I think that it's possible that you're overthinking it a little bit. Like, it's definitely a tragedy. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a justified tragedy.
Yeah.
Like, too weak. Like, mm-hmm. if he was going to do this at this rejection, too weak for if I were playing as Ronnie, and this isn't me playing up Ronnie's simpatude for comedy or anything.
Right, right.
Ronnie wouldn't want somebody like this around.
Yeah.
You know, her goals are bigger than this. Yeah. And like, you cannot, he is too much of a liability. It's and not also, something that you can trust.
She's a part of, you know, this life, this fate that she is actively trying to leave behind too.
Yes.
You know, just he is associated with the Two Fingers, created once she was, you know, determined to be an Empyrean. And part of her plan, you know, if it's to come to fruition, she needs a consort. She needs a lord or a lady who will engage in this union and take the throne to allow her to, you know, assume control, you know, to ascend to the stars and keep them at bay. Right. Like, yeah. How would Blythe have reacted when he was not that lord or that lady, when he was not the consort? Right.
Yeah.
It could have been a problem, you know, waiting later on. So, okay, I'm coming around, you know, just understanding and accepting his volatility. Yeah.
It's not that he's, I think that my initial thought that he had just snapped back into his programming was oversimplified, and that's was based on a misconception.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what's at work. It is a tragedy, but it's also for the greater good.
Yes.
You know, and part of the sadness of Ronnie's story is that she does have to leave behind her companions. They are the infrastructure that launches the rocket, you know, that gets cast off as it goes off into space.
Yeah. They're meant to be burned off and dropped into the ocean.
Yep. Yeah. And one of them, when faced with this, you know, E.G. faces it with dignity.
Yeah.
Blythe doesn't.
Yeah. Well, we should talk a little bit about what happens to E.G. there too.
Oh yeah.
Because
E.G. commits, commits suicide essentially.
Yes.
Feels a lot of guilt about jailing Blythe.
Yeah, and just he feels like a fuck up. You go talk to him, and he expresses regrets, like, "Oh, I've been a terrible war counselor. Look at all this that is, you know, that has happened. You know, I jailed my best friends. You know, just it's, you know, terrible." And says, you know, basically, "I'm going to be joining Ronnie, you know, it beyond soon." And when you reload, his body is dead in the road. And it's pitched to look up at the moon. Like, it is not resting. It is not resting in a normal pose, not just flopped out on the ground, you know, just like it busted out of shit wood. And it's also crackling with the black flame. It kind of had to use this God killing force kind of to make sure he stayed down.
Yeah. 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 It's sad all around. It is 1,000% a tragedy.
Yeah.
I just don't. I can't go along with, you know, if you had never made him mad, he would never want to hit you.
Oh, jeez.
Like, I know that's not your perspective, but
right.
There's enough shared DNA in there where it makes me feel like that. And people are absolutely free to disagree.
Yeah.
You know, with
you so EG has his body. You can pick up his helmet. Says helmet fashioned from crystal looking glass, said to have never left his head. EG was afraid, terrified of his own treachery. And this is similar. So this was made for him, saying it was worn by those committed to high treason. It wards off the intervention of the greater will and its vassal fingers.
Yeah. Like the tinfoil helmet,
but like the Nox Mirror helm. It's a, yeah. It is a similar design, kind of made for his, you know, different shaped head, you know, being a troll, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And here lies the end of, you know, we've now accounted for all three of Ronnie's companions.
Yeah.
There's only the most important one, us, which we'll talk about, in the future here.
Yes, we will.
Yeah, that's going to be it for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks everyone for listening. We appreciate you. Where are we going next?
Well, next week is probably going to be the combined Lake of Rot and like Ronnie's End Quest stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. And then after that, makes sense to do the round table. So, you know, as you hear this, keep an eye out for the call for responses. We take those as replies, as comments on Patreon there. So keep an eye on your inbox for that to go up.
Yes. Yeah. We want to hear from you. The only other thing you can do for us, you've already supported us on Patreon, which we appreciate. Check out our other shows.
Mm-hmm.
There are many of them, and you already have access.
You do. As you are hearing this, we also have a couple of weeks until Duckstream. That is our annual event, 48 hours of streams to support the Transactive Gender Project. Out of Lewis and Clark College. It is an organization that provides education and resources to trans youth and their families. We'll be raising money for them. It's a cause that we believe in and a cause that is especially relevant today.
Yeah. Yeah. We appreciate everyone who watches, donates, spreads the word and such. All that stuff is great.
Yeah.
And until next time, we'll see, you know, be careful, put on your tinfoil helmet.
Please do. But leave some eye holes. You're going to be driving after all.
And we all pray that we will have far more soon.